Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming BBC production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 4 of the All Souls podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
We are beyond thrilled here at the All Souls podcast to welcome the voice of Diana, of Matthew, of Philippe, of Isabeau.
It's a very long list.
It's a very long
you
list.
You can say them all.
All the voices. And of the All Souls trilogy. Ms. Jennifer Ikeda.
Hello, that's me.
That is you. Oh, thank goodness, because I mean, I was afraid we may have had the wrong person.
This is my real voice.
Yes. And, you know, and we'll probably, we might touch on it a little bit, but just, again, I know you probably heard this ad finitum, but when you were doing your Q&A at All Souls Con, yes, it was great to hear you and be up there and meet you and everything. But when you literally like flipped that switch and started reading from the book, it was like, that was magic. It was right there. And it was, not gonna lie, I don't know who else had like shivers and like something that we call from our other read-alongs, a little tear prick. That,
this is not we. This is you.
This is me. Excuse me. So you know that little feeling when you're about to cry or you're moved and you're about to potentially have tears and you get that little tingle in your nose? I didn't have a name for it, so I kind of made something up, as far as I know, called a tear prick. So that's what I got. Summer's shaking her head like, I can't believe you just told that to Jennifer Ikeda. So when I was up there, And you literally, you know, turned and you prepped and you just came out with the reading. It was full on tear prick. I'm not going to lie. It was hard to, I wasn't going to bawl, but it was hard to completely contain myself.
It was unusual to read in front of people. I mean, I'm sure I've said this in some form before I started, but I'm used to being in a very, very small, very sort of cozy, dark, closet-like space and reading totally alone and sort of being really able to like be in my head like fully. So I was a little nervous to, you know, have people in front of me who I could possibly look at and make eye contact with. It's strangely, it becomes easier to, there's something about being in that dark space and flipping between characters. It's so schizophrenic already in a strange way that if I can just see everything clearly in my mind, it happens much more easily and naturally than if I was actually playing a scene with somebody or reading, you know, reading against somebody. I imagine that there wouldn't be such a natural flow to it. You know, one of the perks of being able to be the control freak who tells the entire story, I guess.
Well, we know that you trained as an actress. I mean, we know where you trained as an actress, but maybe many of our listeners don't. Would you like to tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. Well, I was born in Oakland, California, born and raised, and I went to Juilliard for college. I went there straight out of high school, and it's a conservatory program. I did get a BFA, a degree, but I mean, I didn't get to take any language courses or any, there were like a couple of humanities courses, but pretty much it was all voice work and speech work and acting work, physical movement, you know, body alignment, all of that kind of thing. So it was like an unusual college experience and like a very intense one too, because it's a really intensive program, but the training was amazing. And I got to, you know, move to New York and live in a dorm in Lincoln Center. So it was really, it was just kind of magical. Yeah. And then after I graduated from school, I started acting in the theater. I had some roles in like regional productions, like Shakespeare. I did a production of Romeo and Juliet for the Shakespeare Festival of St. Louis, which was really great. We performed in Forest Park, and some nights we had 4,000 people in the audience. It was really awesome. But as I was you know, working through the first couple of years out of school, it became really clear that just working in the theater is not really a way to support yourself, especially in New York City. And very, very fortunately for me, a guy who I went to Juilliard with had been recording audiobooks and referred me to Recorded Books, which is the company that I've probably worked for the most, referred me for an audition, and I auditioned and got the part that I auditioned for. And then luckily they had another book right after that, which was set in Japan. And since my father's family is Japanese and I have like a really good handle on Japanese pronunciation and that sort of thing, they just gave me that book too. So that got the whole ball rolling. And so what started as being sort of like a supplemental source of income became really like the best way to, like the best pairing for my acting work, because it all has to do with story and character and performance. And so it was just like this wonderful, wonderful gift that fell out of the sky. And I've just been lucky enough that I've gotten book after book after book. And that's allowed me to audition for play after play after play. And so both things have been great, steady things in my life. And I haven't had to wait tables or work in an office since I started recording audiobooks. So I am grateful to every listener.
Do you find that there's a large difference in like stage acting, like a big, like transferring from being a stage actress to doing audiobook performance? Because I mean, it uses a lot of the same muscles, but I mean, there has to be it must have been sort of a weird and not weird, but a difficult transition.
Well, yeah, it's definitely a transition. I would say that, like, you know, just in the same way that acting on a stage is different from acting in front of a camera, recording an audiobook is different in as many ways. You know, like rehearsing a play, you get to sort of go over the text many times and discuss it with people at length and try out new ideas every day for, you know, the 4 weeks that you're rehearsing. And then you have an audience, which is giving you, you know, feedback in the moment, and you get to keep trying out things. Whereas, I mean, pretty much with audiobooks, I mean, you kind of just try to get it on one take, you know, like as efficiently and quickly and cleanly as you can tell the story, the better. I mean, I'm always given the freedom to stop and say, I didn't really like the way that sounded. Can we try that again? You know, and directors are always stopping me and saying, you know, that didn't quite sound so much like that character. Why don't you say that line again and, you know, make sure that the voice matches a little better. But, you know, there are plenty of books. It's very difficult for me to listen. There's no chance to fix anything. There's no chance to try anything else out or to, you know, have a second shot at it. So I guess it's a little bit more like camera work than it is like stage work.
So you mentioned that you had, at least to some extent, some voice work, a lot of voice work at Juilliard. How much in Juilliard or after, since, how much accent training or coaching have you had, and also languages?
Well, languages, I joke that I can barely speak English sometimes, and that's the only language I can speak. So I was exposed to, obviously, like living in Northern California, you're exposed to like many, many, many different languages. And then my grandparents on my father's side spoke Japanese, so I grew up listening to it a lot, but never speaking. And at Juilliard, we did have all 4 years, there was like intensive voice work. And a lot of that was just sort of building a foundation, learning how to breathe properly, making sure that you take in the full amount of air that your body can hold. That is one of the most important things that has come in handy with recording. And it's one of the most important things that I do before I start any recording session is just do some breathing work. Because sitting in a chair and reading a sentence, it's surprising how often you run out of breath before you get to the period. And then in terms of accent work, we did have a dialect class at school, a really wonderful teacher named Jillian Lane Pleska, and we would work on various dialects each week. We didn't really cover, we sort of covered the basics, like, you know, the major European accents, and then also depending on sort of the ethnic breakup of the class that she was working with, she would choose dialects that, you know, students in that class might be asked to use in an audition or in a production. So I got to work a little bit on, you know, like Japanese, Chinese, Korean accents at school. And then I was also lucky that in that when I graduated and started getting theater work, I got cast in a couple of shows that required me to use accents. And so that was another really great opportunity to practice, like working consistently with one accent for a long period of time and not just sort of using it, you know, like sort of learning it as a gimmick to, you know, audition with or something, but really like having a sustained character who spoke in a completely different rhythm, tone, dialect than I do. But like I said at All Souls Con, I've also just been a natural mimic my whole life. And I also have a musical ear because I played the piano for a long time when I was a kid, but never learned how to read music. So it trained my ear really well, luckily for me. So I can hear things and copy them easily, but not necessarily sustain something that easily. That's what takes a little bit more of the sort of, you know, homework that I have to do.
When you first get a manuscript for a book or whatever it is that you're recording, what form is it in and what is your process like to prepare it from the moment you get it to actual recording?
These days, usually they'll send a PDF of the manuscript. Occasionally, if you request a paper copy, they'll give you one. Most places prefer recording off of a PDF that you can read off of a tablet, because if you're using actual pages, you have to stop whenever you have to turn the page. I personally kind of preferred working with paper because I would mark the manuscripts much more than I do now. You know, just marking where different characters started speaking. Basically, when I get the manuscript, the first thing I do is sit down and take a pass at it. Read the whole thing for sense of like tone and structure and sort of like the rhythm of the story. When it has more sort of like action-y sequences versus when it sort of is more of a lull and you sort of get more character, you know, scenes and dialogue. And depending on how complicated the book is and how long it is, like if it's a shorter book, it's maybe, you know, like 250, 300 pages. Usually during the first pass, I'll start to make a character list as well. And that just has a breakdown of every single character that speaks in the book. As soon as somebody new starts, you know, appears on a page, I'll make a note, you know, woman, 35 years old, works as the cashier. And oftentimes the author will give you a little bit of information about the way they speak, a slow and leisurely way of working or, you know, presenting herself. And so I think, oh, great, that immediately gives me an idea of how to voice that person. But then at the end of that first pass, before I start thinking of what everybody sounds like, I also have to take stock of sort of who the major characters are, because their voices are the most important to establish. I remember somebody telling me a story. I believe it was about Jim Dale when he was recording the Harry Potter books, is that there was one character, and I don't remember which character it was, but there was one character who appeared and, you know, he gave this character a voice. This is after doing, you know, several of the books. So, you know, he had done hundreds of characters in this series already. And so, you know, he came up with a voice for this new character, which in the following book had a scene with a character who had a very, very similar voice to the one that he had created. And it sort of created a bit of a, you know, I was about to curse, which I shouldn't do, but, it was like a conundrum, you know what I mean? Because he had sort of measured the tone and the pitch and the pace. And then if it matches too closely to the tone and the pitch of and the pace of somebody else in the same scene, it gets very, very tricky. So the sort of planning that you do right away when you get the manuscript is important. And then the next pass through the manuscript that I'll do will be for purely for pronunciation. Any location name, any proper name, any word in another language. Even if I think I know how to pronounce it, usually they ask that I submit the word on a word list anyway, because the person who I'm working with as a director, sound engineer, might not know how to pronounce that word and might or might disagree with me. So at least two passes at the manuscript before recording starts.
I have a theater background. I can't imagine only going through a script two times before being pushed out on stage. That's like a nightmare.
Well, it's more like, I mean, it's kind of like an audition, you know? I mean, you get the material not too long before you have to perform in front of somebody. And, you know, you just sort of have to, like, take a running leap off of that cliff and just sort of trust that your prep work is solid enough and that your instincts are solid enough that it's going to be okay, that you're going to tell the story and it's going to make sense. And I mean, occasionally you'll have done all the prep work in the world that you can possibly do, and you still are in the middle of a chapter and you're thinking, what is happening next? I don't remember. I don't remember what this person is going to do next. I don't remember what was that voice that I did for that person that was, you know, in the first chapter but hasn't been seen in 300 pages. I can't remember anymore. So there's a lot of sort of Hail Marys that you say on the first day that you start recording a book.
Do you have a lot of contact with any of the authors whose books you're reading? Or do the authors, and I guess it would have to be a yes, but if so, do you ask any questions about in your prep phase, or do they give any advice? What is that relationship like?
I don't always have contact with the authors. More often than not, I don't have any contact with them. Many books I audition for, the authors have approval, casting approval. So I'm pretty confident, at least with the more major books, that the author has at least heard my voice and heard my interpretation of the audition material and responded to it. So just getting cast, usually I'll take it as sort of a vote of confidence from the author. But I've only maybe once or twice in my audiobook career had contact with an author before a book has started. And I've probably recorded maybe like 70 or 80 books. So usually there is no contact. And a couple of times I've had an exchange or two after the book has come out, which has been really nice. I got tracked down by an author of a really early book that I did. I got a random email maybe 5 or 6 years after the fact, and like a really complimentary note saying, I can't believe I've never spoken to you, but you did such a wonderful job. So that was nice. So that was why it was like so thrilling to get to meet Deb, because she's like Tolkien, you know what I mean? She's created this entire universe, like this really, really vivid and, you know, full world. So to get to sort of meet her and debunk my like ideas of what she must be like was really amazing.
Do you have any rituals for when you perform? This could be for stage work or on camera work or even for the sound booth.
I do have rituals. They'll change from time to time, but I'm definitely superstitious. What I usually have to do is sort of figure out for each particular project what the particular rituals are going to be, because they do tend to change depending on what the nature of the project is. If it's something that, when I've done like Shakespearean tragedy, for instance, I need to do a really, really thorough physical warm-up beforehand. Lots of stretching and, you know, jumping up and down, running around the room, you know, breathing, articulation work, all of that, because it's, takes like every fiber of your being to play those kinds of huge grand stories. I mean, but for something that's a little bit lighter or more fun or for camera work, mostly it's just about being relaxed. making sure that I feel good and confident, that I'm not being too hypercritical or, you know, too self-conscious. Just making sure that I'm relaxed and having fun is the most important prep. And then for audiobooks, I have to eat something. It's amazing how many takes get ruined by stomach noises. And even after you eat, sometimes if you eat something that your stomach, even if your stomach is very happy with what you've eaten, sometimes it's very vocal about how happy it is. So you'll grab a pillow and shove the pillow over your stomach as you're recording. And, you know, some you just have to take breaks and eat snacks. And so definitely the most important thing before audiobook work is making sure that I've eaten and hydrated well, and that I have sort of all of my sort of audiobook props in place, which are a bottle of water. I usually have like a lip balm because my lips get really chapped if I'm in the booth too long. I usually have apple juice. It's a trick that an opera singer told me about, which is that if you ever have that feeling of like cotton mouth or like your mouth is really dry, if you take a bite of an apple or take a sip of apple juice, there's something about it that stimulates your salivary glands. So it'll like immediately sort of help you out. Cause sometimes if you feel really, you know, like you have that really dry mouth feeling, it doesn't matter how much water you drink. You still sort of feel a little like you've got cotton on your tongue. So having an apple juice there, a sweater, if it gets cold, it's sort of about, I sort of like create a little nest in the booth in which to sit comfortably. Cause sometimes you have to sit for a really long time. So
you've mentioned a few of the things, a few of your secrets to keeping comfortable and somewhat satiated. What are some things that you avoid dietarily?
Oh, well, you know, it's true that chocolate, if you eat a piece of chocolate before you get in front of a microphone, your mouth starts to sound a little, it gets that sort of, that chocolate and dairy, you get sort of that like milky, sort of very noisy mouth. Or it can just sound like your throat is a little, just got like a little film over it somehow. So if I do eat a piece of chocolate or something like that, you have to like drink a lot of water and sort of flush it out of your mouth pretty quickly. I also need to get like a good night of sleep before, because there's nothing more frustrating than being in a recording session and not being able to get through a sentence. I mean, there have been days where practically every single sentence I will mess something up, and those days are really rough. And, you know, usually it's just exhaustion that leads to something like that happening. So rest and, yeah. But other than that, no. I think I also said this at All Souls Con too, is that I'm pretty lucky that I have a sturdy voice, like a sturdy instrument, a sturdy body, knock on wood. So I haven't found that I've done too many, made too many like negative choices before starting a book, if that makes any sense. But that was not like the most clear answer. But like I said, my English is not always very good.
Oh, we deal with that daily. We understand. How do you explore a character to find its voice, especially if you only have typically two read-throughs? And how long does it normally take to find that voice?
Well, I do have a couple of sort of secret ways of working, particularly with assigning character voices. And it has sort of grown out of my ability to mimic, which is that anytime I meet somebody who has a really interesting voice, a really interesting accent, or just is like a sort of, just is a real character, I have a couple of lists of people, and I will add new people to that list all the time. And the list is broken down by gender and age and type and There are even nationalities, different nationalities broken down. And what that list really helps me do is sort of very quickly get sort of a template of a voice or a character to start from. And then as I sort of start from, you know, that first, you know, whatever that first like key in is to that character, whether it's the fact that they speak sort of slowly, or if they're like a really sort of intense, stressed out person, that just being able to have that character in my head as I start the dialogue, like those two things will just sort of magically merge. So it evolves from the sort of original casting that I've done based off of my, you know, casting lists, and it evolves into the character that ends up on the final recording. Because oftentimes I've listened back because I think like, oh, was that too strong a voice that I just did? Like maybe that sounded too much like a certain celebrity that I was thinking of in this part. But for the most part, it's all in my head, all that stuff. I'll listen back and I won't necessarily hear that I'm trying to mimic either a teacher that I had or a famous actor. So that's always good because, you know, I don't ever want someone listening to think, oh, that sounds like so-and-so from that movie is playing that part. I mean, that might be what's going on in my head occasionally, but I want the people who are listening to have their own visual of, you know, the character in their mind. You know, it's already a privilege for me to get to create a voice of a character for someone. Because I imagine it can be very jarring. You know, any time I've read a novel and then gone to see the movie, for instance, you know, there are always things that you love about it and that you're so thrilled by. And then there are always things that you think, you know, like, well, I thought that character was a little smarter than that actor played it as. Or, you know, I thought that that character should have been, you know, like a little bit more this or that. So, yeah, again, but the casting lists have been really, especially with the All Souls trilogy, because of the huge range of nationalities. You know, I was like fortunate to work with a Slavic director many years ago. So when I saw in the second book that we were going to be traveling to Eastern Europe, I was like, oh God, thank God. I worked with that man for 8 weeks. I remember what he sounds like. So now I don't have to do nearly as much prep work as I would have if I didn't have any exposure to these people in my life.
So what I've taken away from that is that you do celebrity impressions.
I might do some, maybe.
So who's Matthew?
I won't tell anybody. I'm not gonna reveal anybody.
We're playing.
Never.
And well, you shouldn't. As well, you shouldn't.
I know who everybody wants to be, Matthew.
Oh well, yeah, that's a whole other conversation. But yes, we completely understand. You've described your prep and kind of getting to the studio and then making yourself comfortable at the studio. What's a typical day at a studio like? Take us through the process of a day in the life of Jennifer Ikeda, narrator, when you get to Recorded Book Studio.
Well, Recorded Book Studio, Recorded Books is a really wonderful place to work. I'll just give a shout out to one of my employers real quick. I mean, they are, first of all, just a really lovely group of people. And they're also, they've been really easygoing and they're totally cool with me taking a break anytime I want. I mean, even if I'm taking a break 10 minutes before, if I'm having a meltdown because I can't get through a paragraph, their attitude is absolutely get out of the booth, clear your head, take a break. So, I mean, for the most part, you know, you get to Recorded Books. I don't like to, some narrators start at 9 a.m. and record till 5. I can't, 9 is a little too early for me to start recording. So I usually get there maybe like 10, 10:30, sometimes a little later than that. You grab your coffee, you say hi to some of the sound engineers, catch up a little bit, and then sit down and get to work. And occasionally, At the beginning of the session, there will be a little bit of listening back to previous sessions, whether it's like a character voice that was flagged that I need a little bit of help, like remembering, or if it's just to remember sort of the tone, like if you're picking up at the beginning of a chapter, what was the tone that the last chapter ended on that, you know, now today it's Monday. What happened on Friday? I can't quite feel what that emotional quality was anymore. So yeah. And then you just sit down and you just go right into it. It's strange at the start of a book, especially because it happens so fast that before you know it, you've started an entire story for people. And it's like, but only 10 minutes have gone by. And this is the foundation for the entire story. Like, I hope it turned out okay. And yet you just read. I mean, for the most part, I like to take a break like at least every hour and a half, whether it's just 5 minutes, you know, check my phone kind of thing, or if it's like, you know, 15 minutes, quickly run out and like grab an apple at the corner kind of thing. And then if it's a longer day, there will be a longer lunch break, you know, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes. Sometimes I'll have to run out for an audition on a lunch break, run out for like a voiceover audition or TV audition, something like that. And yeah, towards the end of the day, it usually gets a little bit more difficult because by that time I've been drinking so many liquids that I just need to go to the bathroom a lot. Because you're just constantly hydrating and like eating to make sure that your stomach doesn't make any noise. And then the last half hour of the day is always a little tricky because something happens. It's sort of like senioritis, you know, in high school, where you just think to yourself, okay, I've been in here for 6 hours. Okay, I've got 30 minutes left. Great. It's going to be, you know, it's going to fly by. And then you just start messing up all over the place because you've just got that, you know, half your mind is already, you know, like out and breathing fresh air again. And the other half of your mind is like, no, continue with the story. Make sure that you get this point, you know, that end of the chapter is coming up. So then by the time that you sort of, you have to find a place to wrap up in the last sort of 15 minutes of the session because you want to have a good place to pick up the next day. And ideally, that's the end of a chapter. Sometimes a chapter is just too long and you realize I can't make it to the end. So if there's a break in the chapter, that's also a great place. Less ideal is, you know, at the top of a new paragraph. But if it's a paragraph that starts, you know, a new beat, if it's a paragraph that goes from dialogue into like more sort of expository information, then that's not as strange. I'm sure that I've had to pick up, you know, at the beginning of a session in the middle of a scene, in the middle of dialogue, which is the worst. I mean, you just sort of feel a little bit like you just sort of, it's like starting a movie in the middle. You know what I mean? Even if you've seen the beginning of it, you still sort of feel like you jumped in and you're a little disoriented at first. So that pretty much, nobody likes it when that happens. So that is to be avoided.
So how did you come upon the opportunity to actually audition for and then get the job for recording A Discovery of Witches?
That was all due to Claudia Howard, who does, she runs Recorded Books and recommended that I audition. And she sent me, it was 4 pages. And a lot of it was what I read at All Souls Con. It was the first meeting between Diana and Matthew. There was a lot of sort of like descriptive sort of narrative information and then also dialogue. So Deborah could get a sense of, you know, my ability to do characters as well as my ability to sort of narrate the story as a whole. And yeah, I remember auditioning with Claudia at Recorded Books and going through it. And Claudia is a really wonderful person to work with, on auditions in particular. But she's been recording audiobooks for basically as long as the industry has been around. And she has given me such great advice and so many great tips over the years. I mean, one of the first things that she said to me, which I thought was so great and amazing, was that, you know, when you're recording a book, sometimes using the silence can be as powerful as using the words on the page. So make sure that, you know, at the end of a paragraph, if some kind of new action or new thought or new theme begins, make sure that you give the listeners, you know, the space, the empty space in which to sort of transition with you. So, yeah, I had a great audition session with Claudia, and then heard back that Deborah had listened to the tape and liked it, and wanted me to do the series. So that was great. And I'm sure I'm repeating many things I said at All Souls Con, so forgive me. But I had no idea. I had no idea what the series was going to be. I knew that it was the start of a trilogy, but I had no idea of the sort of like the breadth and depth and scope of the whole thing. And I also had no idea that it would be so many different characters and accents. That was the biggest surprise and challenge when I got the Discovery of Witches manuscript. Was I had never done a book with so that was so long, first of all, and that had so many major characters from so many different places. So the prep work for that book was intensive. And then also, I mean, Deborah has a really, she has a challenging writing style to read aloud, because her sentences are long. A lot of times, I can't necessarily, unless I go through the sentence and mark it beforehand, I would run out of breath before getting to the end of a thought, or I would take a breath in the wrong place and the sort of the sense of the sentence would be lost. So that book was, it was really, I was like immediately, I think the first day that I was recording Discovery of Witches, I wasn't prepared enough. And I realized oh my God, what, this is going to be really hard, really, really hard. And I think I must have gone home and worked for, another 5 hours that night. I mean, Discovery of Witches, I was really extremely diligent about marking the pages the night before, because I had never encountered a book like that. And if I didn't, I just would get really down on myself in the booth the next day, because I would make so many mistakes. Yeah.
Do you remember specifically how long it took you to record each book of the trilogy?
I had things printed for All Souls Con. The last book, I did misspeak a little bit. I think I said I recorded it in 3.5 days. It was more like 4.5, and it was spread out. I as soon as I said that and at All Souls Con, I thought wait a minute, that doesn't sound exactly right. The first two books, I had more time, and so they were sort of spread out over the period of, I think both of them happened over the course of 2 weeks. And some of those recording sessions were shorter, maybe just 3 hours. And then there would be a few days of 6-hour sessions. I mean, I remember with Shadow of Night, I remember the deadline being, quickly approaching and going in on Saturdays when the office was empty and recording all day on Saturday and Sunday to make sure that we got it done in time. But I also, when I was looking back at the schedules before All Souls Con, I hadn't remembered that I had been recording an audiobook just before and just after I started another book on both Discovery of Witches and on Shadow of Night. So I went straight from one book into Discovery of Witches, and then straight from Discovery of Witches into another book. And then the same happened on Shadow of Night, which meant that my prep time was, my mental energy was sort of split in a way, which also might have accounted for the sort of panicky day one on Discovery of Witches. Because there were just, it was a lot of recording. I don't record so many books anymore. Because it's hard. It's hard work. And I've been lucky enough that I've gotten some regular voiceover work doing some commercials or radio spots. So I've been able to, if my schedule is already packed, I'm okay with saying no to accepting a book because I'm not like desperate for the money anymore. And I also find that I can, when you've recorded so many books, like, of course you record books that you're just thinking like, oh, I really don't like this book. I really don't enjoy this. And I really hope that the person who's listening to this, who does enjoy it, can't hear that in my voice. You know what I mean? I want the person who loves this book to love listening to it as much as they love reading it. So that's always hard too. So not having to go from book to book to book has been a blessing. But that, you know, but, and then speaking of, you know, like enjoying recording, then you also get to, you know, have these, in addition to the challenge of recording these books, it's also like the fun of getting to do a wonderful, embody this like classically beautiful, sophisticated, intelligent French woman. You know, like I'll never get to play a character like that on TV or on a stage or in a movie. This is the only time I'll get a chance to, you know, or men to play all these male roles, you know? It's like such a, it's so great to be able to do that with these characters, so.
Have you recorded both fiction and nonfiction? And if so, which do you prefer?
I've done very little nonfiction, which ironically, I've, like personally, I tend to read more nonfiction than fiction. But my audiobook work has pretty much, I'd say like 95% of it has been fiction. And I guess because of that, I don't know which I prefer.
Say getting another book, another recording job, would you, just because something is nonfiction, wouldn't preclude you from considering it, correct?
No, absolutely not. I'm open to anything. I'm, you know, I'm much more interested in, you know, what kind of story is being told, you know, and if it's even with nonfiction, you're still telling a story. You're telling the story of someone's life or someone's travel adventure or whatever. So whether that story has come out of someone's real experience or out of someone's head doesn't make any difference to me.
Of all three of the books, which did you find the most fun to narrate? And which was the most challenging?
Which is the most fun and which was, I think Shadow of Night was the most challenging. Although it's hard to say. Discovery of Witches was challenging just in that, like I said, I didn't quite know what I was getting into and how hard it would be. And I remember getting to the chapter towards the end of Discovery of Witches when it's the nine character scene that takes place. Is it inside Emily?
The bishop
house? It might be in their house.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nine characters. It's Miriam and Marcus and Matthew and Diana and Sophie, Nathaniel, yes. And I remember recording that chapter and afterwards talking about it for a couple of days about how it felt so schizophrenic. I'd never done anything like that. Like an entire chapter was, it was just a nine character scene. And that was really hard, but also really fun. I mean, now I'm sorry, rambling. I think probably the most difficult was Shadow of Night, just because of the journey that they have to take. And right at the top of the book, as soon as they land and encounter Kit, I mean, it says right away that the way that he spoke was distinctively different than anything that Diana had ever heard before. And I mean, I remember taking a look at that and just thinking, oh my God, what do I do? Like, what do I do? I don't want to do something that you know, I don't want anybody who's listening to think, I don't understand what she's saying. I don't understand what that character is, like what that accent is. And then also it spoke about how Diana herself was trying to adjust the way that she spoke in order to try to convince people that, you know, she was not actually from, you know, present day 2000 and what year was that? 9 or 8 or 10, I remember. And then I also thought, like, oh, God, what do I do? Do I change her voice, too? So it was a lot of sort of just making decisions about, you know, I'm not going to overthink. How should an Austrian emperor in the 300 from 400 years ago, how should that person sound? I'm just going to make a choice and go with it and stick to my guns and hope that it sounds good in the whole story.
That is definitely one of the most hilarious accents that you do in these books, is Emperor Rudolph.
You know, I really, when I got to that character, there's something about him that I really liked so much. I liked the sort of blatant way that he flirted with Diana. I liked the sort of, you know, the idea of somebody who has absolute power and, you know, command over everyone around him, you know. And then I also thought about, you know, like people with a Napoleon complex and, you know, this and that. And also that he was sort of fun, that there was something fun about being in this, like, extremely memorable time and place. So I actually had more fun recording that voice than probably any other accent, just because it was a little over the top, and I really enjoyed it. And I did worry at the time, like, oh, God, I hope this might be too much. But I really liked it. I really had fun doing it. So I just hoped that, like, that fun would translate to the people who were listening.
No, it's totally fun, and it's one of I think it's actually the only accent that I ever try to mimic that you do in this book, and I will say stuff to my sister, like I'm walking across the house, I'm like, la diosa, and we just kind of, but she knows it right away, like it doesn't matter what the word is I say. We had one of our other podcasts where we were talking about a character named Louis, and I used that accent when I said it, and she immediately knew that I was
doing Rudolph
from
no, not just Rudolph, Jennifer Ikeda's Rudolph from Shadow of Night. Talk about meta, Jennifer.
That's amazing.
Oh my goodness.
That's great.
How do you research, or do you research historical figures? Do you, when it comes to their voice?
I try to stick with the manuscript to get all my information about the characters, because I want to keep in the author's world, and I'm going to take everything that the author gave me, not that I can get outside, because I just feel like I get to do some interpreting, but the material that I'm interpreting from is the text. And maybe that comes from my theater background, is like a reverence for what is on the page, and like an absolute sort of adherence to the idea that every piece of information that you need to tell the story is written on these pages for you already. Not that you don't have to do research when you're, you know, doing plays. I don't mean it like that, but, and Deb is fantastic with that. I mean, she's already done pretty much all of that for me, you know, like referencing Henry Percy, for instance, you know, and his, you know, the way that he spoke, and like his hearing and his sort of speech pattern. And, you know, that again is like another really, I really like having characters who have, this is going to sound so strange. One of the very first books that I recorded was called The Pearl Diver. That was the book that it was set in Japan and was about this girl who dove for pearls and also for other, you know, abalone, you know, for food and that sort of thing. And then she, she was at a leper colony in the book, and it spoke about an older man, one of the older lepers, whose face was disfigured, and it really affected the way that he spoke. I found that description so moving, and maybe also because I've had, you know, family members who've had strokes, you know, that I've encountered as a child, and I remember seeing the way that their faces were sort of half frozen when they were speaking. And so having a character detail like that, where someone's face is a little disfigured, or someone's a little hard of hearing, or somebody, something like that, that like is some kind of, those kinds of qualities are just really wonderful as an actor, I find. Like, I respond to them because you can, those are things you can feel in your body as you're reading. You know, you can tense your face up and only use half of your mouth to speak as a character. And, you know, what you're feeling as the actor performing like that, the sort of strangeness of it, and the frustration that you don't have, you know, use of your full faculties. It sort of gives like an emotional charge, I think, to the characters sometimes. And then the other reason that I did not do very much research outside of these books when it came to just like historical facts and stuff is that, I mean, you can read about Sir Walter Raleigh for your entire life. I mean, there is so much about these people, like so much incredible information, that it was it would have been a rabbit hole. Because I also love, you know, as like a huge fan of Shakespeare and classical plays, when I found out that Matthew's best friend was Christopher Marlowe, I mean, I think I yelped. I was like, that's great. That's great. I know all his plays. That's wonderful. I've been in one of his plays. Great. So that sort of thing was good. Like just creating an emotional connection as opposed to like an accurate sort of historical one. And then the real resource for the accent work, a really great website. It's called the International Dialect of English Archive, IDEA, IDEA. And it is, it's a database with hundreds of recordings from people all around the world of like various ages, and it's a sound sample where every person reads the same piece of text, and then there's a short interview with them afterwards. And for many countries, like, you know, for England, for instance, you can click on the county that you want this person to come from, and they will have a recording of someone from that county. You can say, I want somebody who grew up, you know, who's from around Derbyshire, you know, who's maybe like in her late 60s. And you can find that on the IDEA website. You know, some other parts of the world are not quite so well represented on there because it's just harder to find. It's just been harder to find, you know, fluent English speakers than recorded them and put them up on this website. But it's a wonderful, wonderful resource for anyone who ever wants to listen to or reference dialects from around the world. And it's also fascinating because you just get a really interesting interesting look at people's life experiences. You know, you'll listen to a recording of a woman from Australia who was actually born in California but moved to Australia when she was six, and she'll speak about that, and her accent will be a weird sort of hybrid amalgam, you know, approximation of something, but it's not quite clear. So it's nice because you don't sort of get like the stock accents on there. You really get real people, and you get to listen to their real voice. rambling.
We love to hear anything you care to ramble about, and we don't consider it rambling. Also, by the way,
it's informative.
Okay. It's very informative. Who would have learned about IDEA if you hadn't told us? So
it's a great website.
Oh, believe me, it's going to go in the show notes, and I'm going to be looking at it tonight. So, regardless of the project, once you've come to the end of the project, how do you celebrate or acknowledge or mark its completion?
Oh, you know, that's something I don't do enough, I think, is celebrate the completion of something. I mean, one thing that used to be very satisfying when I recorded with Pages was that at the end of the day, I would have a big stack of papers that I could have in my hand and, you know, sort of feel the weight of it and say, like, this is what I accomplished today. It's one of the reasons that I still prefer to read off of, you know, actual books than on a tablet, because it's really important for me to have like a visual and sort of like a tangible idea of how much of a book I've gotten through and how much I still have left to go. So when I used to have Pages, I would either take those pages that I had completed, I would either take them home and use them for spare printing paper, or I would, like, sort of with a little bit of a flourish, toss them into the recycling bin. And that was sort of like a nice gesture, like, these pages were completed today, and these pages will now be recycled.
The circle of life. Exactly. returning it to the universe. That's kind of nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and even the ones that aren't recycled are eventually recycled.
That is true.
I take them home and print crosswords and audition material and all sorts of things.
And if it's a PDF, then it's all electrons that get reused anyway.
That's right. That's right.
So if the series is greenlit, what are some of the scenes that you are most looking forward to seeing in a possible BBC production?
Oh, wow. I love everything that happens at Set Tour. I love them going there in the beginning and meeting Isabeau. I love like riding out into the forest and encountering the goddess. I love her witnessing Matthew Hunt. I love, you know, Philippe, Isabeau. I love all of the stuff at Tetour. That's the stuff I would like to see. And then also learning about the, like, seeing the chapel that he built. All of that, I think, is what I most look forward to. And also, it's France. It's the French countryside. How could you not want to, like, get into that?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Is that a trick question?
All you gotta say, exactly. All you gotta say is France. France, that's
France.
It.
France. Well, and also, to be honest, I think that the way that Book of Life culminates is so, like, it's so graphically horrifying and vivid, and I mean, it's thrilling. And so I'm, you know, like, looking forward to seeing how they put all of that sort of that huge ending sequence on the screen.
So as we wrap up here with Ms. Jennifer Iketa, could you tell us what are some of your upcoming projects? Of course, things that you are at liberty to discuss.
The first thing I'll plug is that I'm going to be on an episode of Blind Spot.
Oh, wow.
NBC show.
Oh, my gosh.
I am super excited. I just did some ADR for it today, so I got to see a little bit of the footage, and it looked great. I think the show is really, really, it's really exciting. It's really well done. The two main leads have terrific chemistry. And I have a really, really nice part in this episode. I play a scientist at the CDC. I may or may not be seen in a hazmat suit.
Oh, sexy.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. Right? Yeah, and it's like a nice, I mean, I think I'm in maybe about six scenes in the whole episode, which I've had, you know, like I was on Smash. I was maybe on like three different episodes of Smash, but for like a single episode on a television show, this is probably like the biggest arc I've had in a single episode. So I'm excited about that. And then I also just started rehearsals for a play in New York, just yesterday, in fact. It is a play called, well, the title has changed a little bit, but the working title right now is Charles Francis Chan Jr.'s Exotic Oriental Murder Mystery. And it is a play by a wonderful Asian American playwright named Lloyd Saw. And I would describe the play as sort of his, like as an artist, sort of his confrontation with himself and with society, sort of grappling with being an Asian American artist and living with all of the history that comes with that, while trying to forge a new identity for yourself, that you, so shedding the sort of cultural identity that was given to you without your consent, and then like smashing it. The play feels like it's screaming out of him, which I think is really, really exciting. And it's with a really wonderful theater company called NATCO, the National Asian American Theater Company, which is celebrating their 25th anniversary this year. So I'm really, really proud to be working with them on this show. Really, really proud. And I don't have any audiobooks lined up at the moment, but I do have, I do have something that exciting that's happened in the audiobook world, but I can't, unfortunately, discuss it right now. I think I'll be at liberty to discuss it in a week, but not at the moment.
All right, we'll call you back in a week. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
But for real, though, did you get a little excited when Deborah said that she was writing and writing about people we know?
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, my God, yes.
Okay,
yes,
so yes, I'm going to it a next step further, which I know there's no guarantees, there's no knowledge. The three of us, I mean, we can't speak for you, Jennifer, but the two of us, I'm assuming the three of us, have no connection, no information, no idea what she's writing. However,
maybe she does.
No, I don't know. I really don't know. Okay. I found out what you guys did. It basically was like, get ready for more.
So if it is, it seems like it's in some way related, even if it's extremely tangential. It's somehow related, it seems, to a person or
characters.
Yes. So my question would be, if the opportunity came about for however many more books that were linked or not linked, would you be interested in narrating them?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, there are, I almost wanted to like put in requests with Deborah and say, like, could you make sure that you tell us Philippe's story? Like, will you please tell us like what his life has been like? Like, let's just like, that's for the first, you know, the first new trilogy that she's going to write. And then for the next trilogy, can you get into some like demonic lore? You know what I mean? Like, let's hear some stories, like let's make some demons like the main characters of this next series. Like the tone can totally shift because they're demons. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think we have a laundry list going as fans of what we'd like her to be writing, whether or not that's what she's actually writing is hard to say at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know anything. I really don't know anything at all. I wish I did.
Well, I think we will wrap it up there and just offer, as we always do, whether it's in a week or in a month or in 6 months, you are always welcome back here on the All Souls podcast, because even though this was about you, your work, your training, and specifically about your work on this trilogy, because of your relationship to the trilogy and now to our show and to anything related to All Souls, you are now in this community. We would love to have you back anytime whatsoever.
Oh, thank you. I would love to talk more. I feel like we just got started. Thank you so much.
Oh, believe me. Sorry. Yes, you're welcome. And Summer's looking at me. You're like, I am like the talker of the talkers. So...
No, I have so many like more questions that have arisen in my head that I'm keeping to myself for a later time because I fully intend to have you back.
No, so. Great. We'll give everybody a couple months to think about what they want to hear next time.
Oh, there you
absolutely.
Go.
We will troll for questions for you for sure.
Great. I'll do my best. Use my limited English to answer.
You've done just fine with this interview. You sound perfect.
It's like English is your first language.
Oh my goodness.
I like to say that I became an actor. One of the reasons I love being an actor is because everything that I say is handed to me. Like, I don't actually have to use my own words to articulate what I'm feeling. Somebody else can do it for me. So.
Well, thank you, Jennifer Iketa, so much for joining us here today on the All Souls podcast. We wish you all the best, magic and demonness and witchiness and vampiric whatever. All the powers.
Oh.
All the best.
Thank you so much. You too. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
That was pretty darn awesome. Having the magical, or at least very talented, actress slash narrator slash...
I mean, you could just say the voice of the All Souls Trilogy.
The voice of the All Souls Trilogy, yes. Having Ms. Jennifer Iketa here with us virtually in our studio, goodness gracious.
Be sure to join us for our next episode when we will be discussing chapters 2 and 3. I don't know if you noticed this, but 3 is rather short. We would have been a strange and very short podcast if we'd done a read-along for chapter 3.
That would have been a quickie.
We're good at those.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. You can find our audio channel at www.audioboom.com/channel/AllSoulsPod. Many thanks to Penguin Audio and Recorded Books for allowing us to use portions of the audiobooks in our show. Visit our website at www.allsoulspod.com. Follow us on Twitter at AllSoulsPod. Find us on Facebook by searching for The All Souls Podcast, or email us at allsoulspod@gmail.com.